Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the team that should win the World Series is the one that gets more walks. That would be Lenny. He always is complaining about not getting enough walks. I am delighted to tell you guys that I am joined today by a repeat guest, a familiar voice to listeners of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, and that is Field Yates joining us from Bristol. How's it going, Phil? Field?
Mina,
oh, gosh,
Phil.
Wait. Okay. No, I can't do that.
You want to keep this? Can we keep this, please?
Okay, keep it. Okay, how's it going, Phil?
Phil, yeah. Here's a good thing, Mina. You are not the first person to have butchered my name throughout the course of my 32 years on this earth. But okay, what I will say is I actually prefer being called Phil, because what I don't like is when people intentionally butcher my name and they're like, hey, Court. Hey, Track.
Court.
Hey,
yeah.
Grass. They're like, has anybody ever said
Meadow?
That? They're like, hey, has anybody ever called you Meadow before? I'm like, no, never happened. You know, believe it or not, no one has ever pieced together that I am named after a large body of grass. And if I insert a separate large body of grass, it might come across as original. So I'm good with Phil. I'm in.
Do you know the term Lee, like L-E-A? It's a popular crossword.
You know something, Mina?
Answer.
I'm more of a Sudoku, however you pronounce it properly, person. I know you, like, dominate the times, like,
you know,
so many
do,
times
yeah,
crossword.
Yeah, I do. I mess around a little bit. Anyways, that also means Field.
Lee does, really?
Yeah. I hope I'm saying it right. It's L-E-A, I know that. There's a lot of words I only know from crossword usage and are not part of my everyday vernacular.
Gotcha.
In any case, Field, I am excited to have you on today because we've got a couple of big trades, one of which involves a team. We're going to talk about, when we preview the games, we're going to talk about Niners-Panthers and the Niners trading for Emmanuel Sanders. The other one involves a team that I would say played Monday, but I think played is the wrong word to describe what they did to poor, poor Sam Darnold. Rough week for Sam Hive, Field. And you know I'm a member and I'm not turning in my card, but that was honestly one of the worst outings I've seen, like, I want to say all season. Is that fair?
Yeah, there have been some bad ones too, Mina. The Dolphins have played six games so far.
That's
the
true.
Redskins have played seven games already. The Bengals have played seven games already. But I'm with you because a couple of factors here. First of all, the Jets were coming off of a super promising effort.
I know,
like a sort
strutting.
Of, there was kind of a strut to the Jets. Swagger and demeanor going into last night. Like, people were saying, like, I could see the Jets kind of keeping this one close, right? And beyond that, Monday Night Football at home, and talk to any player that's been a part of Monday Night Football, they'll tell you there's extra energy involved when you are playing on Monday Night Football, national TV audience, only game in town. Also, like, the Jets maybe were sort of figuring that they could do something against the Patriots offense with CJ Mosley being back. Anyways, there are a lot of reasons why the Jets seem to have a bit of hope going into this game. And yet last night, like, I wouldn't even tell you that they laid an egg, because that will be unkind to birds and other animals that do lay eggs. Like, that was pathetic. Wow.
It was bad. It was rough. Well, of course, we're not going to talk about the Jets. We're talking about the Patriots trading a second rounder for Mohamed Sanu. I think a lot, the Patriots were one of the teams, really Patriots and San Francisco, being thrown around as, I guess, teams that were likely to go after a wide receiver, right? And A.J. Green was a name you heard at times. I think the first reaction I saw, probably some fans were disappointed that it wasn't Green. Also, I think people thought giving up a second rounder for Sanu was a little rich. I know my thoughts on that, but I'd like to hear yours first.
So first of all, on the A.J. Green thing, and I don't want to just sort of pivot a different direction from what you were intending to ask about, but A.J. Green, people must remember two things. First of all, the salary cap implications, right? A.J. Green makes a ton of money, like $15 million per season. I don't have the exact amount of money he is due for the rest of the season right here in front of me, but, you know, the being able to slide or fit A.J. Green into your salary cap was going to be prohibitive for the Patriots, who are at, as of Monday afternoon's business, $2.5 million. Now, Mohamed Sanu was due a far more palatable number that the Patriots can get to by just restructuring a contract or two. Second of all, and this is just a fascinating conversation about A.J. Green, is the Bengals are ardent in their stance. They do not want to trade him. Now, Mina, if I told you to just entirely separate yourself from the situation, and there was an 0-7 team that was rebuilding, that could really use the extra draft capital, that had a 31-year-old wide receiver that is in his final year of his contract, and the wide receiver market, as we have seen today, as we have learned today, is very hot, right? I mean, there's a lot of draft picks being sent around the league for players that are lesser, albeit healthy, but lesser players than AJ Green. Imagine the motivation to trade that player. Nope, none for Cincinnati, but that is a tangent. So let's go to Sanu and we can maybe banter on AJ Green later or on a different podcast. Mohamed Sanu was the third wide receiver in the Falcons, but you could make a case that they are as deep or talented at the top of their wide receiver group as any team in the NFL. Maybe the Rams, maybe the Vikings with their 1-2 punch. The point is, Mohamed Sanu is at your typical number three wide receiver. The Patriots have long admired him as a player. Now, is he explosive down the field? Is he going to be a massive vertical threat? No, probably not. And does a second round pick at first sound like a lot for Mohamed Sanu? Probably not, Mina, but you have to look at this a little bit. Or it does feel like a lot, I should say.
Yeah.
You probably need to think of this a little bit like real estate, right? The Patriots were bidding, right? We know that Emmanuel Sanders was traded to the 49ers after Mohamed Sanu. We'll talk about that next, but it tells you that the 49ers were also hunting. And what the 49ers have that the Patriots do not is A, more resources in terms of the cap. So they could, you know, there are ways that they could probably entice the Falcons, whether it was taking another big player, another player, et cetera. There, and then beyond that, I think many people would say, hey, you know something? Although the 49ers are 6-0 right now, if you had to imagine which team's draft pick would be better in 2020, you would think if it was the same round, it would be the 49ers pick, right? So if the 49ers are offering a third and the Patriots are offering a third, the Falcons may say, you know something? We view that 49ers third as more favorable than the Patriots third if you're projecting out to what it's going to be in about 6 months from now during the NFL draft. So I think that the price, although it may come to some people's attention as a bit steep, it's probably a pick somewhere around number 60 for a player under contract for a year and a half that I thought, given the circumstances, I'm not surprised.
I agree with everything you said. So about the value and the market and how, why it shook out that way. So I'll just address kind of what else I found interesting about this field, which is Mohamed Sanu. I've always felt he was an underrated player. He's extremely strong. He's extremely reliable. He's a great route runner. He's not blazing fast. He's not that, outside threat that I think Patriots fans allowed themselves to fantasize a little about, perhaps with AJ Green. But the fact that they went after him, I think it tells us something about how the Patriots view this offense. He averages just over 11 yards per catch, which is actually less than Julian Edelman. His average depth of target is also lower than Julian Edelman. So if anything, I think this suggests, you know, they might be doubling down on the short to intermediate generously passing game, which, you know, might reflect how they view Brady right now and what he's doing and what he's capable of doing and what they have to do with this defense, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think they were just very specific about going after this type of receiver.
Offensive line is basically a plague right now. It's an epidemic in the NFL, which might be a bit of an extreme way of describing it, but how many teams have A, depth, and B, talent along the offensive line? The answer is not very many. So the fact that the Patriots don't have a great offensive line does not make them unique. It's just hard to pass protect, right? Like, how on earth do you pass protect long enough to make a player or to like make a quarterback a vertical downfield passing game threat? Like, I just don't know how you're able to establish that seven-step drop. Like, the days of Bruce Arians and Carson Palmer together is so unusual, right? Like, that's just so, like, it's just hard to find in the NFL. That doesn't surprise me that we are seeing teams rely more on the short to intermediate passing game as we have seen so far.
Well, I think that's a good transition to the other trade for a wide receiver, which is the San Francisco 49ers dealing a third and fourth round pick from 2020 to Denver for Emmanuel Sanders and a fifth. So I guess start off by talking about the Niners offense. You know, everybody thought they would go after a wide receiver. It was no secret because it's not been an area of strength, even before the injuries, but they have a lot of injuries. Rookie Deebo Samuel has been out with a groin injury, I believe. Trent Taylor's been out. Marquise Goodwin went out on Sunday with a head injury. So this was an area that they needed to address. And it's also a team that is now a legitimate Super Bowl contender. So before we get to the defense, which is why they're a legitimate Super Bowl contender, let me ask you what you think about, what do you think about Sanders in this offense? And how do you feel about the Niners offense generally ahead of this matchup with Carolina?
So it's really funny, Mina, because I was doing a radio segment earlier on before we taped this podcast, and someone asked me, like, what do you think about Emmanuel Sanders inside this 49ers passing offense? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, we really haven't had to see this 49ers passing offense because they have been so, so good defensively so far, right? I mean, they've played, and I get it, a lot of teams have played a lot of bad teams because the NFL has sort of an imbalance right now. There are a lot of bad football teams. So the 49ers have beaten some bad teams, but they've also beaten some really good teams, but they beat these teams like the Los Angeles Rams in Los Angeles, 21-7. Like, has anybody evaluated Jimmy Garoppolo's play so far this year? Has there been a quieter...
Let's talk about it. I want to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Like, what's your evaluation of him right now? Because there was so little that we've seen from him.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. Like, we've barely had to evaluate him because they've been doing it with so many other methods.
I know. Okay, so here's some numbers. 7 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. I think that's, by the way, very relevant in this particular matchup. We'll talk about the Carolina defense and what they've been doing. He is 11th in QBR. One thing that struck me, Field, they didn't do anything in the, against Washington, right? They put up 6 points. But he looked really mobile. He looks healed. Now, and I mean, in obviously, he tore his ACL, so I'm talking about his ability to just kind of run around. He looks fine. 17th in adjusted net yards per attempt. He is facing the 5th lowest pressure rate, which is fascinating. I think some of that is he's getting the ball out quickly, but also that offensive line has been super banged up, obviously. So that's interesting as well. And then I think, let's see, he has the 4th highest expected completion percentage, which is also obviously very telling and speaks to what Kyle Shanahan is doing for him. So all of which is to say he's fine.
Yeah.
That's like, my answer. He's fine.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I guess my thing is that, like, so we don't really evaluate quarterbacks in anything but extremes, right? Like,
yeah.
You're either above the...
So it's fine, not good? I can't do fine?
But Mina, the thing is that, like, you are bringing reason and you are bringing logic to football analysis, which is sort of not accepted.
Okay.
So I think he's fine, too. Like, he's been fine, and
fine.
I think he's been functional and fine within the confines of what the 49ers have asked him to do, which is totally a cop-out answer by us.
It's accurate,
but I don't
though.
Have a great feel on it. So maybe we'll get a better read on what Jimmy Garoppolo means to this 49ers offense, or maybe we'll get a better read on what Mohamed Sanu means to this Patriots offense when they have to play in games where they're actually forced to throw the football more and play keep-up style with whoever their opponent is. Now, maybe the answer is no, because maybe these defenses are just so good. But Jimmy Garoppolo, he hasn't skated because we don't know that he hasn't been bad. But I would say if his production was put somewhere else where, like, let's just say Matthew Stafford had that level of production so far, wouldn't we be talking about Matthew Stafford as in, like, is he doing enough to will the Lions to win? And the answer is it would probably be no.
Last week I said this team almost reminded me of those Jags teams with Blake Bortles, which is not to compare Jimmy Garoppolo to Blake Bortles. They're very different players amongst other things. And he's not, you know, yes, he has 6 interceptions, but I don't think he hasn't been losing them games. But I think what I meant is the defense has been playing so well that fine and functional is enough so long as the quarterback's not turning over the football. And I think, Field, that's why this matchup is really interesting. That's why I think this is a great game, because this Panthers defense so far leads the NFL in takeaways and sacks.
It's such a fascinating game, and I don't know if I want. Am I spoiling this if I mention it on the podcast or the piece that we're doing, the insider piece?
Our little roundtable. Yeah,
roundtable.
I think you can spoil it. Yeah,
we do it every single week, and I think by the time this podcast is out, the piece might also be live. But I try to go in there without looking at who other people that are part of the roundtable have mentioned. Right. And yet when I went back today, cause I had to go, I actually, believe it or not, we also were asked to, predict a trade.
Oh yes. I got to change that because I was wrong.
Well, my prediction was Emmanuel Sanders to the Broncos.
Oh
which,
yeah.
I'm sorry, to the 49ers. So this is not like
a tune in the horn.
It's just
no,
fact.
Yeah.
Nice. So I, thought that there was a chance that maybe that could happen. It ends up happening. So I had to go switch. And as I did, I happened to see that you had also predicted in your upset pick of the week that it was going to be the Panthers over the 49ers. Now, my first line of that was like, I'm sure many of you remember Will Ferrell in Anchorman saying like, milk was a bad choice. Like, I immediately regret this decision. That was kind of like I said there, like, I'm sort of worried that maybe I will regret this decision to pick against the 49ers right away. That being said, the Panthers are so good up front. They can torment any offensive line, especially one that has two offensive tackles out. Now, by the way, two excellent offensive tackles, Joe Staley and Mike McGlinchey. And I know they've gotten better than average fill-in replacement value, but still, like, that could be Brian Burns and Bruce Irvin and Dontari Poe and Gerald McCoy. Like, that's a handful there. That is a legitimate handful for that 49ers offensive line this week.
Quick breaking news on a trade. I just want to cut in. Quandre Diggs, line safety, has been traded to Seattle, and they also, for a fifth in Seattle,
so can I turn the tables on you for a second and just, before I chime in, tell me, I know, sorry, I mean, I'm really...
No. I'm just laughing at, I'm like, breaking news, Quandre Diggs.
No, but so what's your initial reaction? Because I have a little bit of intel that I can add after the fact.
Interesting,
into this move. But let's hear it, but it's more from the Detroit perspective than it is, from the Seattle perspective.
Well, I really want to get back to the Panthers defense. I have a lot to say about this. But on the topic of the Seattle defense, they really, really needed help. In their secondary. So that was certainly an area of need for them. So it's a seventh and a fifth. I mean, value-wise, that's fine. His contract is pretty reasonable. Field, he's always struck me as a solid kind of replacement level type player, unless I could be horribly wrong, drawing on my Lions memory.
No. Keep going. Yeah,
that's how I feel. Pretty good. I'll take it.
Yeah, so what I would say is, so the pick, so I'm always a fan of teams swapping late round picks for veterans, right?
Get it right, yeah, no problem.
Diggs is under contract through 2020, so you get, again, it's not just costs, it's also the control of a player for a year plus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, so he fills a need, right? I mean, like, Tedrick Thompson, and you're way deeper into, like, Seahawks Twitter than I am, obviously.
It's not great, Field. It's not great.
Right. And I believe, I'm pretty sure, so this past Sunday, obviously, there was that, the opening drive play that you're like, whoa. And, Pete Carroll, who's, like, nicer than anybody ever, like, had some, like, by Pete Carroll standards, like, relatively scathing words for Tedrick right after the game that you're like, whoa. Like, it was like, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed style from Pete. So the move makes total sense to me from Seattle side. So then you're probably asking yourself, like, why would the Lions want to make this move, right?
That is what I want to know, yes.
So my thought is this, is that the Lions, over the past really 3 years, we have seen them move on from players that some would say, like, wait, those are productive guys, right? Like, you know, how about, like Theo Riddick, for example, who they cut earlier this season, and he eventually ended up with the Broncos. Now he's on IR. But there have been players. Theo Riddick was cut. They traded away Golden Tate. They traded away, who else they traded away last year at the trade deadline? I can't believe I'm blanking on other players, but Golden Tate and somebody else. I'm being a total goof right now. I can't think of another deadline deal trade they made.
Either.
But I'll think of it in just a moment, I'm sure. But anyways, they made trades at the deadline last year to acquire future draft capital and value that is worthwhile. Yet here we are, and they're doing it again. That's my thought on this, is that, like, Quandre Diggs is a good enough player to be on their 53-man roster, and they're not dealing from some position of, like, massive, they don't have a glut of safeties. Like, really no team does, right?
Yes, it doesn't necessarily speak entirely to the abilities or fit of the player. Yeah, I guess they like their safeties there as well, but, yeah, good for Seattle. Panthers defense, much better than the Seahawks defense. So, happy to talk about, these guys. So I mentioned that they lead the league in sacks. They're 21st in pass rush win rate. They blitz a fair amount. So, which is fine. I think, there's a little bit of potential to come down back to earth. And with the takeaways, they did, I think they had like approximately 44 takeaways against Jameis Winston. So a lot of those from that game. But, from watching this defense, it is remarkable to me, Field, how much they've evolved in just 1 year. Okay. And we know that Ron Rivera, who is a very defensive, he is a defensive coach. Wasn't he a member of the 85 Bears? I'm making that up. I think he was.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay,
linebacker.
He, loves linebackers, took over the defensive play calling last year, changed the scheme. Although, they changed it to a 3-4, but they've been incredibly multiple, right? I mean, they spent most of the time in their nickel, but they remind me a little bit of that Super Bowl Eagles defense in that they've just got waves of guys coming at you from every direction. Brian Burns has been an absolute terror for them. Probably a defensive rookie of the year candidate.
I think so too.
The other ones on the other side of the field and then there's a few, but in any case, the pass rush, one more thing on the defense and the switch in scheme field is it's really unlocked a lot of these guys. Vernon Butler, right?
Yeah.
Shaq Thompson, like, guys who I think Rivera was just has been very, very smart about how he's deployed them. He's been rushing them from all over the place. And, you know, it could be a long day for Jimmy G.
It could be. You're right. And by the way, like, they're doing this right now. I mean, like, they have been short. I mean, they have so much talent up front, obviously. Yeah. But, like, they've had players go on IR on defense. They've had guys miss games so far. Like, KK Short, one, you know, a very talented player for them. A guy who's got makes a lot of money. He's on IR right now. Like, and I think done for the season. Like, there's some talent that has been missed so far in Carolina, and they don't seem to be any worse for the wear. So, and the secondary looks really good, and I always think that, like, a secondary looks better with the pass rushes getting home and vice versa. Like, it's a marriage between those two that can make groups look even better than they are. But they're a talented group, to be clear.
Yep.
My thought, though, is that this is the best test that the 49ers have seen all season, and it's not close. The best test that they have seen from a defensive standpoint, as in, like, the Saints defense is better than any other defense they have played up to this point. You know, the I guess the sort of the factor here, or I don't know the factor, but, like, maybe the X factor or deciding factor could be which quarterback, and not to simplify things and not to make everything about quarterbacks and football, but Kyle Allen has been, like, he's, you know, he's helped them win four straight games without Cam Newton, which he has not.
Oh boy.
But, like, is Kyle Allen, like, along the same lines as Jimmy Garoppolo, like, are they winning?
Yeah.
Because of him? Are they winning not in spite of him, but along with him? I kind of feel like that's how you would describe both these quarterbacks. They're
totally
winning along with these quarterbacks also winning.
I love that. I think that's perfect. I think he's been fine. I'm going to use the exact same adjective I use for Jimmy Garoppolo. The only my only ding on Allen is that he's a little bit of a fumble. He is a bit of a fumble rooski, right?
Yes.
In the way that
three
Jimmy
fumbles lost in one game, yeah.
Throws some picks. But other than that, yeah, like, they're not asking him to do a ton. And he has been, actually, I think it's also worth noting that while, yes, the Panthers offense has looked good at times over the last few weeks, they've faced bad defenses. And the only good-ish defense they faced was Houston, and they were less, the offense was less efficient against Houston. So
sure.
I think it's quite telling. So yeah, I agree. I think the Cam Allen, I think our colleague Bill Barnwell put it this way, but I think I've seen it some other places too. Kyle Allen is better than an injured Cam Newton. A healthy Cam Newton is better than Kyle Allen. Like, that's how I see it. So to
totally
me, the question
like
that the team,
reasonable take again, by
yeah,
the way.
So the team just has to figure out, and this is, by the way, not a simple thing with this quarterback, as we've seen over the last 2 years, is Cam Newton actually healthy when they get him back? So that, you know, like I said, it's complicated, I think, by, he has obviously played through various injuries over the years, but Kyle Allen has been good enough in the same way that Jimmy Garoppolo is. Unfortunately, and we can wrap it up here, but Field, I didn't call you Phil. I almost called you Bill there.
That works too. My dad's name is Bill. So there were times like
it,
growing up where my mom or my siblings would be screaming like, hey, you'd hear mostly my mom because my siblings would not call my dad Bill. But my mom would scream like, Bill. And like from a distance, if it sounds like, Bill, like you could not kind of tell if it was Field or Bill.
Bill is just such a dad name.
Such a dad. And my dad is such a dad in every way. Like, when he texts me, it's minimum 7 paragraphs.
I don't know if you saw my dad's text to me during the Seahawks game. I published it on Twitter. It was about Chris Carson. He was like, Chris Carson runs tough with toughness and authority. He's the best player.
I love
it. It was the most dad stuff. Anyways, the 49ers defense is awesome. We've talked about this. I guess, you know, every statistical measure, they're crushing it. It's funny, they're a little bit lower actually in pass rush win rate, but they blitz the third least in the NFL because they don't have to. So I guess my only question to you about the Niners defense is, do you think there's any chance they come down to earth? Or do you think they're gonna make life difficult for Kyle Allen and company?
Yeah, I think that they will make life difficult for Kyle Allen and company. And cause the thing is that like, I don't want to say like, when they face a real offense, because first of all, Mina, like, we're too far into the schedule.
We're six games in. Yes,
like,
drop
they,
that
and,
stuff.
And not only that, like, they did it to the Rams on the road in Los Angeles. Obviously, you know all teams well, but that's a team that you are very familiar with, having spent the summer covering them during preseason. The Rams are not, like, this is not some, like, 2 years of good luck. No, the Rams are good offense, just as the Falcons. But, like, the biggest test, so to speak, for the 49ers defense this year, I would imagine would be a couple of matchups with the Seahawks. They'll play the Ravens at some point. They play the Packers at some point. But still, like, I think this defense is good and definitely good enough to give Kyle Allen fits. So, I don't, you know, like, it's funny. I predicted a low scoring game last night. It was 33-0. So not particularly low scoring on one side. This feels to me, though, wouldn't surprise me if it's like a 2017 type game.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, not the team that has a rookie kicker who is filling in because of the veteran kicker on IR, but it's actually the team that gave a kicker a very lucrative 4-year deal.
Yeah.
He's having struggles. Joey Sly.
Not great.
He's kicking great for Carolina.
Yeah.
Not so great for Robbie Gould so far this year. 7 missed field goals already.
Yeah. It's been a rough one.
It has
been. It's been a rough one. Sly's a little, he's, I don't know. I'm not entirely sold on him either, but yeah.
I love it. Where else do you get entirely sold or not sold on kickers analysis?
But you're, I think this is the perfect way to wrap the conversation, which is it could come down to a missed kick. I think it could be one of those types of games. All right. We're going to do a mailbag, but first I want to take a second and tell you guys about Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy. Getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smart interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. The best part? Once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit card debts or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/Mina to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes and it will not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/Mina.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, if you leave a review in my iTunes page with a question, I will answer it. By the way, while you're there, swipe on over to ESPN Daily. It's my new podcast.
And it rocks.
Oh, thank you. Well, we could use some positive energy in the reviews always, so leave a review there too. And if you leave a question there, maybe I'll find it and answer it on this podcast. For those who don't know, ESPN Daily, it's a different story every day. It's only about 20 minutes. Both so far, I've actually come in under that. And then at the end, I have a little bit of time to talk myself. It's been a lot of fun. Sam the 6-foot man asks, if you and your husband, I'm going to ask you this one too. If you and your husband switched careers, who would perform better? Clearly my husband. So my husband produces music. He produced a theme song for this podcast and also ESPN Daily. I don't know anything about it. I don't know how, the first thing about how, I can't even, I have zero musical talent in my body, but setting that aside, I just don't know how any of it works.
Feel? I found a song that I believe your husband produced or maybe worked with.
Okay.
Aaron Child, the song was Easy. Did he produce that song?
Yeah, he did.
That song, that's like a frequent, like just, I'm taking a walk. I need some positive,
really?
Upbeat movie. Yeah.
Nice.
Music. So, shouts to your husband. Never met him, but. You know
what about you and your new wife? Who would, if you switch jobs?
You know what's funny is that, so my wife is incredibly personable and has a zilly, like she is part of the reason why I spend a lot of time away from home, and I know you do too, Mina, but part of the reason why it's less of a burden that I think I anticipated it to be is because she's so social, has so many friends. And like every night when I'm going back from work being like, oh gosh, like hopefully she's not just like, yeah, here I am, like watching another rerun of Friends on the couch while you're not here. You're instead working. You know, I'll text her or I'll call her and she'll be like, hey, sorry, I'm out the drinks. Yeah, I'll be back home probably around like 10. Do you need anything? Is it important? And I'm like, oh, no, not important. Just me calling to say hello. So she's very social, but she has zero interest. And perhaps what I would say is she is totally uninterested and like just completely.
No fantasy takes?
Not only no fantasy takes, but does not like to be behind a microphone. Not at all. No interest whatsoever.
That's funny. WeeMan87 asks, if Lenny was a coach, what style offense would he run? Ooh.
Ooh, great question right there.
I feel like the wishbone is the obvious answer because he's a dog.
That's a great point.
Yeah. But he's heard his mom complain enough about watching her Seattle Seahawks that he knows he would do something with more of an emphasis on passing and play action. D. Marty T. Party asks, Nesquik or Yoo-hoo? I do not have a preference, do you?
No, I don't. The only chocolate milk that I'm like particularly aware of is, I was going to say it has a cow on the label. I don't even know what the company name is. I believe it's called like Horizons Organics.
Because I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
My brother-in-law is like actually a very, he's like an ardent drinker, a consumer of chocolate milk. So I do know that.
Adults who drink chocolate milk are fascinating to me. I feel like that's such a power move to walk into a meeting with like just a big chocolate milk.
I totally agree.
Don't care at all.
Yeah, there's like a bunch of stuff in the various fridges here at ESPN that I'm like, it's always stocked. Do people ever drink that? Like, is anybody ever like, you know something? Let me go grab like a 16-ounce bottle of whole milk and consume it.
Adults who drink milk as well, generally. BC Money 0404 has a very long question about whether I've tried White Claw, if I remember Zima. I always make jokes about Zima and people always look at me like I'm weird. I haven't tried White Claw, but it is my favorite nickname for Adam Thielen.
Oh my God.
I keep trying to get that to take off.
Why is that not taking off yet?
It's such a good nickname. I don't know.
Oh my God. That is so, so good.
I should get that in front of him.
Yeah, right? you really should.
I feel like he'd go for that. He seems like that kind of personality.
He might not be busy on Thursday night during a game. White Claw. I can text it to his agent, see what he thinks.
Maybe we can
push this thing further and further.
Get it on t-shirts.
Yeah.
And then he wears those yellow gloves too.
Very stylish.
I hate those drive me crazy because I always think they're flags. Last one, Fellowship of the Family asks if I prefer the nickname Danger Russ or Soul Glow Russ. I have never heard the latter. So yeah, I guess I'd have to go with Danger Russ. Which I also don't like saying. I mean, I you know, love Russell, but yeah, I don't know. All right, let's get to Eagles-Bills. So, Field, I may have predicted before this season that the Eagles were going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Mina, you weren't alone.
Feeling great.
I was quite in on the Eagles before this season as well.
Well, let's start there. Let's attempt to diagnose everything that happened. Because I think before this last Sunday's game, the beatdown from Dallas, I made a lot of excuses for the Eagles.
Yeah.
I pointed to the injuries, Malik Jackson not having a deep threat with DeSean Jackson. But what I saw, I feel like, was so far beyond just injuries. So I think that, you know, that would be a bit of a cop-out at this point.
Yes, I think that injuries are no longer like the fallback in Philadelphia. And so I feel like I've noticed a changing of the trust. I was talking about this in the context of a different organization. It was the Redskins earlier on this season, and that fan bases either have trust or they have hope. And like the Dolphins they have hope, right? Like their hope is they've got three first round picks next year and another one and two more in 2021. Trust is, hey, the Rams are 3-3 right now, but we think they're going to find their way out of this 500 hole and still have a chance to make the playoffs this year. And lo and behold, they bounce back with a win. And oh, by the way, they traded for Jalen Ramsey. I don't know. So for Eagles fans, I think for a long time, it's been trust. And I think deservedly so, right? Like Doug Peterson and Howie Roseman are the architects, or at least the two most prominent figures on a coaching and management side of a team that won the Super Bowl, right? But it feels like Eagles fans are growing restless quickly. And I know that's probably just like the nature of sports fans, so I shouldn't make this simply about Eagles fans in this regard. I just happen to, it's such an engaged market that you're able to take the temperature of them really quickly or really frequently, I would say. So there seems to be a lot of restlessness here, but let's identify a couple of the things that I think are actually problems that extend like beyond, you know, it's like for now, it's not a coach and GM thing. Because I don't think it's a coach or GM thing at all. As a matter of fact, I have implicit faith in both of those people. The secondary is bad. But you know what, Mina? Like, it's been bad, right? Like, it's been bad for multiple years. It was bad the year that they won the Super Bowl. They allowed 600 passing yards in that game, right? Beyond that, the Eagles, but throw that aside, we know it was bad. They've got some injuries up front, which on the defense side of the ball, which you've mentioned. But what I think maybe jarring for me is two things. Is that without DeSean Jackson, they've grown really slow all of a sudden in the wide receiver game. Like they just, the ability to get off man coverage just feels very non-existent right now, right?
Yes.
And then beyond that, the offensive line, like a lot of the principal pieces are still there. As a matter of fact, they're all still there. And I don't want to, you know, say that like these players don't deserve to be there anymore or anything of that nature. Like, I'm not saying they need to be replaced, but the offensive line just doesn't seem like it's playing as well to me. And that might be an eye test thing more than it is a metrics thing, or more than it is, whatever the yards before first contact suggests in the running game, or whatever the sack number suggests in the passing game. It feels like it went from a group, Mina, that had the chance to be the tone setter for the game, to a group that right now is passable and it's fine, but it is not changing the course of the game on a week-by-week basis, which I thought it did during that Super Bowl season.
I think that, so going into the season, part of the reason I was high on this team was, on paper, yes, the secondary's been bad. Yes, you know, there's been some injuries, there were injuries last season, but I felt like they addressed those issues. Like, when I looked at the secondary going into the season, I thought they would be significantly improved. I thought the offensive line was extraordinarily deep. I thought, even setting aside, like, Deshaun Jackson can't be why your offense struggles.
Right.
Okay. I get it.
Yeah.
He's great. It's important to have that deep element, but I thought, well, yeah, they got Alshon. Zach Ertz is great. They got two good tight ends. They drafted a guy who I like, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, Miles Sanders. They just haven't been good. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, they have not executed. Alshon Jeffrey has not executed. We saw what Nelson Aguilar, the lack of execution. Ertz even had, I think, a drop. Maybe it was Goddard, but
I mean,
you know,
look at Ertz's production this season, and you can tell me. And listen, there's a totally compelling case to be made that his, you know, catches are not him; it's the way the offense is utilizing him. But still, the point is that, like, he was the, you know, the most difficult tight end, or he along with, I mean, it was an incredible run for Travis Kelce and George Kittle last year. But I mean, 116 catches last year, 116.
That's crazy.
By the way, before people jump down my throat on this, like, I've looked at the numbers and just two very basic metrics. The Eagles are middle of the pack in both sacks allowed and of rushing yards per attempt, which are not by any stretch like the whole picture on offensive line play, but they are at least a part of the puzzle. So I get it. The numbers tell you they're like kind of average. That's I think part of it is that I expect them to potentially be really, really good, specifically protecting Carson Wentz, and that doesn't feel like it's been the case.
Wentz, who before this week I defended, I said he's played well. I don't think what happened was necessarily his fault. He did struggle as they were trying to play catch up after that horrendous first quarter, and made some, you know, dumb mistakes and misreads. But I don't put this on him. I really don't. It's just when the bright spot of your offense is Jordan Howard, that's not good.
I know.
That's who's been good, by the way. And I know, look, I don't think Doug Peterson, certainly he's not on the hot seat or anything like that, but I do think, Field, that the play calling has gotten weirdly conservative this season. In this Dallas game, I can't remember, it was at some point in the first half or something, they just kept calling runs over and over, and then, you know, I've noted on early downs, they've seemed to be calling them at a higher rate. I don't know. There's just something a little off. Like, I don't know if he's coaching with his back against the wall or anything. That's a cliche. And on the other side of the ball, by the way, while we're talking about coaching, yes, they've had injuries. Yes, this is a deeply untalented secondary, but I don't think Jim Schwartz's scheme has done them any favors.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think that's probably something that has Philadelphia fans growing restless. It's just like, what's the old saying? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting the same results. And it feels like the Eagles kind of just trot out the same thing every single week. The personnel changes a little bit, but it feels like largely schematically they're pretty comparable. And yet we're expecting different results when we really shouldn't, because on the roster right now, and I don't mean this, I don't want this to come across as like offending the player involved, but there was like an incredible amount of hype and excitement for Jalen Mills returning this past weekend, right? Like, again, this is not, like, again, he has played for them. This is a seventh-round pick a couple of years ago, and I get it. It doesn't matter how you entered. It's where you, like, what you do once you get there. But, like, Jalen Mills, this is not the return of, you know, Patrick Peterson to the Cardinals lineup, right? This is a player that's fine. He's solid. But, you know, that tells you just where they're at right now is that they are so, so desperate for talent right now. And I don't know, like, on the roster as things currently stand, it's not going to be big enough. It just isn't.
Yeah, I think obviously they were one of the teams being mentioned in the Jalen Ramsey sweepstakes. I think first and a second or something like that.
Yep.
And look, but between the time we record this and the time it comes out, there could be other moves to bolster that secondary. Although, given what their playoff odds, how much they've dropped, you know, I mean, it's halfway through the season, so we'll see. But, yeah, I think, you know, there it's a talent issue with Schwartz. It is, he plays that, he has guys one gapping in front, spreads them out. So you've got to, you have, the safety often drops down to help stop the run. And as a result, you kind of, they kind of leave the secondary out on an island a bit, at times.
You have to get home. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to get, and so when you're not, or even when you are, I just don't think they have the talent to support that. Also, by the way, that style of defense has been very good against the run. Until Dallas, because C.K. Elliott did whatever he wanted against them. So I think,
on that getting home stat, by the way, just the thought, they had 10 sacks against the Jets when it was still the Luke Falk experience. They have 7 sacks in the other 6 games. And sacks, I think, can be a flawed stat too, but they, like, 7 in 6 games tells you you're not getting much in the way of pressure.
So this game is interesting to me.
Yep.
The Bills, so the it feels like, I was gonna say it feels like two teams going in different directions, but even though the Bills won last week, I feel like there's a lot of unease around them, you know, having, so they, what was it, 31-21 against Miami, but I think there's starting to be a lot of, like, I think amongst Bills fans, the Josh Allen doubts are sort of creeping in a little bit more than you saw, I think, earlier in the season. Or, you know, it's kind of when you have a quarterback in his second year and you reach that halfway point, you start wondering, okay, is this who he is? You know? And Allen in the Dolphins, I mean, you kind of saw, he's done something similar in a few games this year where he's just absolutely terrible, but then he puts together like one really beautiful drive and that's enough. Do you think that field, fans, like, do you think we know who Josh Allen is? And do you think he, this team with obviously a very good defense, fits into the paradigm of the teams we discussed earlier?
So the reason, so I don't think that the fan, I don't think that we know, I'd say we, the fans, not we, all of us, we don't know specifically what Josh Allen is right now. But the answer is he's not the player that is carrying this team to success. He is also not holding them back. You know, like, this is not such a wretched level of performance from him that they can't be productive, right? The reason why that matters so much, though, is that there's like some gray area on what level of player he is that basically the rest of the roster is ready to do this right now, right? Or at least a lot of it is. The defense is
top to bottom,
good.
Actually. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, even the offense, by the way. I mean, God, how many times did you see John Brown open?
Yeah, John Brown, who's at least 50 yards in every game so far this season. I get it, not monstrous, but still, like, he's been a reliable player from them. Cole Beasley has been a reliable player for them. Dawson Knox is a promising young tight end. They've got an identity on offense that I think they're willing to enable of executing. And defensively, they're really, really good.
Really good.
So that's why this matters more. It matters more than it does for, if we don't know specifically what Sam Darnold is right now, which maybe there's still more to figure out. It's like, you know, even if Sam Darnold, like Sam Darnold right now, like we saw last week that it certainly helps, but no one expected him to be the best quarterback in the NFL this year. But the Jets have so much work to do elsewhere that just a big Sam Darnold leap was not going to be enough for them to win this division this season. Whereas Josh Allen becoming a really, really good player is at least enough for them to make the playoffs and maybe enough for them to challenge the division, because they're only a game back of the Patriots right now, and it's week 8 of the season. Like, we're done with, like, what's cute, what's happening early on in the year. Like, we're actually pretty far into the season.
The Bills have an easy schedule. Throw that out there as well.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to add on top of the one thing that struck me about watching him. I know it's against the Dolphins, but this is something I've noticed all year. The offensive line has been playing really well. I don't know. This is a team that is ready to win. Like, you're right. They are. It kind of reminds me what I used to say about how I felt about Chicago last year, and Bears fans got so mad at me when I said on this podcast and on Chicago radio, which was a mistake because this was not friendly territory, but I said, if you get even average play from your quarterback in that postseason, you're going to the Super Bowl. And they were like, Mitch Trubisky had one, you know, great drive. Well, we'll see how that turned out. But my point is, like, they just need average play. average play.
Yep.
And they need him to not turn the ball over.
They need Jimmy Garoppolo play.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen play, if we're being real. Kyle Allen, and it's...
He puts together like one really gorgeous drive every game.
He does.
Josh Allen does a couple of throws
that are just ridiculous Allen every game. Yeah. And so that's why, and I'm like an apologist of the Bills, Mina. Like this has been my thing during the offseason.
They're great.
They're doing all the things the right way. So if the question is Josh Allen right now enough to be a player that can take them deep into the playoffs? That right there remains to be determined. Do I still have implicit belief of like the things they are doing? Trajectory-wise?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
the way this team is built, the way they're coached, the way they're executing on defense, it's been tremendous. And they're going to go to the playoffs, right? So unless they implode because of the schedule and how well they've done so far. So in a moment, we're going to talk about two teams that face... Well, we've been talking about quarterbacks and do we know them or not? And I think at this point we know who those teams' quarterbacks are. And that's Tennessee and Tampa Bay. Well, I guess Tennessee has got a new quarterback, but before we get to that, I want to just quickly tell you about ButcherBox. I've told you guys about ButcherBox before, but I'm telling you about it again. One of the best aspects of ButcherBox is how convenient it is. A box of 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, heritage breed pork, and more. It's shipped right to your door. It doesn't get easier than that. Thanksgiving's right around the corner, and if you're hosting, I am hosting, things can get stressful. ButcherBox can help. This holiday season, new customers can get a free turkey in their first box. Ooh, I would like a free turkey.
Same.
That's right. ButcherBox is making the experience of cooking a Thanksgiving meal better. Get your turkey delivered to your door instead of dealing with long lines and crowded aisles at the grocery store. And like their beef, chicken, salmon, pork, and scallops, you know the turkey you'll be serving from ButcherBox was humanely raised the way it's meant to be, with no added hormones or antibiotics ever. I love the meat I get from ButcherBox. So does Lang. I'm not going to lie. We got some steaks, grilled them up, and, you know, he tends to sit near the table when I eat them, and he enjoyed some scraps. Take some stress out of your schedule this holiday season. Sign up at ButcherBox.com/Mina today and get a free Thanksgiving turkey plus $20 off your first box. That's ButcherBox.com/Mina for a free Thanksgiving turkey plus $20 off your first box. ButcherBox.com/Mina. Okay.
I stand for ButcherBox, by the way. I stand for it. I have a friend who works there. Great company.
I honestly was so delighted with my last ButcherBox. My aforementioned husband, he used to be a vegetarian, and then he switched to eating meat, I want to say like 6 months ago, and
really?
The timing could not be better.
Yeah,
okay.
Go.
So two teams whose timing has not been great. Tennessee and Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Two quarterbacks whose fates seem to be I tweeted after Jameis Winston had that really horrible game, and I tweeted, well, now that means Mariota has to shred, and everyone old takes me. I was like, guys, it was a joke. The joke being, it always feels like they're kind of like I don't know what you call it when two waves go in up and down, you know what I mean?
You're way smarter than I am. I went to Wesleyan, which is like junior varsity Yale. I don't know the technical term for it.
I don't either. But it does just feel like one plays well, one does the other, but they both have been bad or were bad. Mariota was benched, so why don't we start with I'd like to talk about these teams specifically about the quarterback position more than this game in particular. They obviously have some big decisions to make. It feels like Tennessee knows that they're going to move on from Mariota with Tannehill in now, unless Tannehill plays bad and Mariota comes back and is awesome. And it's a pretty easy decision, right? Mariota, so far this season, he is 30th in QBR, just above Josh Rosen, 31st in completion percentage. His numbers are equally bad, under pressure, not under pressure. At this point, do you feel like there's any chance he sticks around in Tennessee?
I do not. And, I think that one of the hard things for when a player moves on from where he was drafted, particularly a player that was drafted high and number two overall is about as high as you can be drafted.
Yep.
Is I don't want to say that there is embarrassment or guilt or admission of error from the person that drafted him or the team that drafted him. But invariably, like when a first round pick does not make it to a second contract, I think if you were to like qualify it, it would be a failure. And that's not a John Robinson comment right now, the Titans GM. It is, by the way, he was not there. He was there. He got there in Mariota's second year. Interestingly enough, he came from Tampa Bay, where he had certainly had an intimate knowledge of Marcus Mariota because the Bucks weighed the pros and cons of drafting Mariota versus Jameis Winston. So he certainly was very familiar with him. So I'm taking him off. Like, he did not make the pick. Let's be very clear about that. But still, the organization has invested a lot in Marcus Mariota. And I know, like, we don't evaluate players or we don't evaluate them simply on character, but, like, an unbelievable guy.
Everybody loves him there.
Incredibly solid, like, stand-up, salt-of-the-earth individual. So it probably was difficult to bench Marcus Mariota, as it was. But I don't see him returning. I think this team has to dip into the quarterback market water somehow next offseason, but they're going to be in that sort of peculiar spot of not drafting high enough to be, you know, in the Tua / Justin Herbert / whoever else declares for the draft conversation, Joe Burrow, et cetera. But also, like, do you bother paying a ton of money in free agency to a quarterback when we know that, you know, rarely does a quarterback become a free agent if he is a no doubt about it?
I think that Tennessee is... It's an interesting team because they're probably going to finish 8-8, right?
Yeah.
They have a tendency to, but they for so long I've kind of felt like with Mariota, and I mentioned this last week when you ranked the quarterbacks, you know, well, how can you really evaluate him? Is it fair? They, you know, if so many offensive coordinators, weapons have been kind of mediocre at times. The line isn't always played well, but one of the nice things about, you know, getting to see a player play over a long stretch of time is you get a little bit better at detaching. Well, okay, yeah, but when he's protected, he's not great, right? Or yeah, but he still hasn't really figured out how to pick up a blitz, and he's And I think he really is responsible for a lot of his sacks, and I feel that way about Mariota. Now, I haven't always felt that way about him. I actually personally believe Mariota's trajectory was altered not just by the constant turnover in coordinators, which is real and a problem, but also when he broke his leg in 2017.
Yep.
To me, it kind of felt like he was never really the same guy in terms of the way his mobility sort of dovetailed with his throwing game after that. And obviously, he's struggled with injuries since then as well. Now, that doesn't mean he can ever be a capable starting quarterback. And by the way, he'll get a job next year. I don't know if it'll be a starting one. It'll really depend on how a lot of things shake out. I think in some of teams like Chicago and Washington and Denver even. But this is not a difficult decision for Tennessee, to me. It's over, right?
Yes.
Tampa Bay, on the other hand, I think is a little trickier. And I realize we're coming off of some pretty poor play by Jameis Winston. But with Winston, you get these flashes, not just of competence, but of really good quarterback play. And I think that's made it harder for them to be more definitive, I suppose, in their decision making.
Well, that is true. There have been some moments of stardom for Jameis, moments of prolific play. But I think not to be lost in this conversation, Mina, is that the Titans have an identity that is play outstanding defense, run the football really well, and perhaps copy the model of a player that both you and I believe, penned as a potential fit for them next offseason. Teddy Bridgewater with the Saints right now. Like, what Teddy is doing right now is solid, and it's really impressive. But it's also, like, the team is constructed in a way where they don't need Teddy Bridgewater to go out there and throw for 350 yards and carry them offensively in any given game, right? The Buccaneers are not constructed that way. They've been awesome against the run, but they remain a massive funnel against the pass defensively, which means you're going to give up a lot of points. They don't have much in the way of a running game, and the offensive line has been up and down so far this year. Good guard play, but inconsistent tackle play. It's sort of a smorgasbord. They need a quarterback that can be unafraid to let it rip. So where, and those, like, you just don't get, I don't want to call Teddy Bridgewater merely a game manager. I also don't want to say the Titans only need a game manager, but it feels like if one team is more capable of winning going forward with that Jimmy Garoppolo play that we've been describing, at least Jimmy Garoppolo through six games, again, there's plenty more that Jimmy can become. It feels like Tennessee more than Tampa Bay.
I think that's true. I think that's not good for Tampa Bay, though, right? Like, maybe if your team is dependent on the quarterback doing a lot, your team's not built well, right? I mean, I don't think Jameis Winston is a good NFL quarterback. I don't. I think he's just too inconsistent. But I also think he's not played on good football teams, right? And he is actually, I think the nature of the Bucs teams he's played on, with bad defenses largely, poor offensive line play at times, has exacerbated his worst tendencies. This is one of my favorite things with quarterbacks, feel, is to think about, well, what if this player had been drafted by X team or Y team? And I think Jameis Winston is a guy who, his, I'm not saying he would have been great necessarily, but because I think a lot of his mistakes, doing too much is like a euphemism for not reading the field well and, right, and some other problems. But I think he was not put in, I don't think either of these guys were put in good situations, but they are who they are. We are, you know, time has passed, history happened, and, you know, these teams both have to make decisions. We discussed Tennessee, Jameis and the Bucs also face their, it's obviously the same timeline. They have to decide whether or not they want him for that fifth, to franchise him at this point, right?
Yeah, it's franchise. Yeah. This is the fifth year option for them. Yeah.
Right, or extend him. So my question to you is, what should they do?
I think that in the case of Tampa Bay, they need to let the rest of this season play out before they can make a strong plan for this reason.
Yeah.
Like, what if they go, and I'm just laying out scenarios. If they're 4-12 and they're picking fifth, you might have a chance for a quarterback, right? Maybe they're picking eighth, whatever. If they're 8-8 and they're, you know, they figure out a way to be middle of the pack, well, then you may have no choice, right? Because like, it's Jameis or who? If, you know, they're not, I don't think they're going to, at this point, I'm not counting on them winning, you know, like 10 or 11 games. So I think it's dependent upon how the rest of the season unfolds. And then also the other thing, Mina, is, and this is a hard evaluation to make by the time free agency begins, but part of it is also going to be, let's say you are picking in the top eight. Your head coach, Bruce Arians, your offensive coordinator, Brian Leftwich, and your GM, Jason Light, all have to have at least a general feel of what they believe the rookie quarterbacks or the incoming rookie quarterbacks to be. Because let's say you're picking top eight, you at least have a chance to get to one of the top three quarterbacks. And if you're sold that it's a strong, deep quarterback class by March when the new league year begins, you may say, you know something, no more negotiating, we're good with it. If you aren't sold that it's a great quarterback class, and a la maybe the Giants 2 years ago when they decided not to take a quarterback at number two overall, maybe your plan changes. Maybe you say, you know something, it's just not good enough, so we try to do either a bridge deal with Jameis or even a one-year deal, because it might be that Jameis Winston's best, most lucrative average annual basis contract after this year is like a one-year less than the franchise value, but more than he would get on a multi-year contract elsewhere, like 1 year for $20 million bucks.
Bet on himself. I mean, I actually think I might do that if I'm Jameis. You know, I think this is a defense that has the potential to get better next year, right? It's a very young secondary that's moving in the right direction with some ups and downs under Todd Bowles. I look across the landscape and I don't see a team that's going to give him a big multi-year deal. I just don't, given this class and some of the quarterbacks that might be floating around. So I think you described a situation that could be advantageous to both sides for sure.
I think so.
All right. I'm going to ask you some questions, but first I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be a slow process. Kathy Altura's CEO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MINA. ZipRecruiter.com/Mina. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
First question, Field. I think I know what you're going to say. Who's the third best team in the AFC?
Indianapolis Colts.
Ooh.
How about you? Is that where you were going to go?
I have a lot of recency bias. So I was going to say Baltimore.
Okay.
But...
Ooh, that's a good one too.
Coulter, no, it's, I think it's between those two teams. I do. God, the NFC, yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I actually, to be honest with you, I could amend my answer for the Ravens really easily. Mm-hmm. I am also in recency bias because I've just been spending a lot of time studying the Colts recently, and I just love them.
So you're high on them.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, then I'm going to scratch question two and ask you a Colts question. What rank would you put Jacoby Brissett at?
Relative to the rest of the league?
Yes. Quarterbacks in the NFL. Active playing quarterbacks.
So I'm not going to cop out, but I used to have this theory that like there's a sliding scale for quarterbacks, right? Like what we have is like a clear-cut tier at the very top, usually. Then we have a tier at the bottom that is like replacement, not even replacement level, like guys who need to be replaced. And then a scale where it's like there's like 8 or 9 guys that could be, in a given week, a top 10 quarterback. They could also be a number 20 level quarterback. Or maybe number 18, right? I think Jacoby Brissett is somewhere in like that 12 through 20th best quarterback. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah, I do. I think that's reasonable.
Like, and the reason why he would go to 12 when he plays his best football, and we saw some of his best football this past couple of days, he would go down to 20 when, let's just say, there's a week where Matthew Stafford is lights out and, you know, guys, other guys that are not always givens, you know, Kyler Murray has a great week, for example, and Philip Rivers plays well, and maybe Philip deserves to be in that top 12 class as it is. But like players of that ilk.
Yeah.
Nick Foles, when he's healthy, plays at a certain level. Jimmy Garoppolo could all leap above Jacoby Brissett in a given week to push him down to number 20.
Mm. I think that's good. I think there's like a, a 10 and a 10 and then a vast middle. Third question. Have you heard the song Misbehavin' from the TV show Righteous Gemstones?
Maybe if I heard it, I would be able to tell you, but I, not that I know of.
Have you heard of the show Righteous Gemstones?
No, am I totally missing the boat?
It's on HBO. If you watched Eastbound and Down, you might like it. It's Danny McBride.
Oh, I did love, yes.
Okay, then you gotta watch it. This is a song, it's on the show, and if someone sings it, then it's in your head. It's like a curse, like it follows. Like if someone sings it, you're like, oh no, now I'm gonna sing it all day. The beginning goes, Mama told me not to, I did it anyway, misbehaving. So stupid.
Oh my God. All right. I have to check it out. I'm going to go onto the internet after this and I'm going to go listen to it.
Listen
probably
to Ms.
never
Haven.
Stop listening to it.
You got to listen to Misbehavin'. Okay. Question four. What is an item? So this is inspired by our colleague Ryan Clark wore a velvet bow tie that was like the size of my head on
huge.
TV. It was enormous.
I thought that he may have
shocking.
Borrowed it from someone's Christmas tree. Yes.
I thought it was like a dead bat hanging off his neck, to be honest. So it also kind of looked like the Wu-Tang Clan logo. My question is, what is an item of men's clothing that you wish, that you like fantasize about wearing, but you haven't gotten the courage to pull off or to try? But like something you're like, I see someone wear this kind of look and I wish I'd like to try that.
Random story here, but a friend of mine, who I grew up with, got invited, has a friendship with Kent Bazemore, currently of the Portland Trailblazers.
Excellent.
And he went to Kent's wedding a couple of years ago, which I think might have been in Virginia. Kent went to Old Dominion for college. I think it might have been somewhere near where he went to school. And my friend showed up, or I saw him. We were both leaving Boston, I think it was. We happened to be at the airport at the same time. And he had like this incredible white smoking jacket, white tuxedo that I was like, dang. And he had it like he was just carrying it. And I was like, I am seriously jealous of that jacket. Yet, I don't know that I would purchase it because I don't know how often I'd actually have the chance to wear this jacket. I think I could pull it off.
Yeah.
I just haven't had the right occasion to wear it. That would be something that I would really like to rock.
Maybe like the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I like that.
Have you ever seen like women now, they wear like kind of cape blazers? I kind of want one of those.
Cake blazers?
Cape? No. Like,
oh, cape blazers. Oh. Okay.
Cake blazer is more like something I would own.
Sounds delicious. Yeah.
They're like kind of half cape, half blazers. I don't know.
Yeah.
Seems cool. Last question is from Lenny. I don't know if you know, he doesn't say them anymore. I just say them for him.
Yeah, which I totally respect. Like Lenny is preserving his voice from when he has to accept some sort of award. I'm not sure what award he's going to get, but he's going to get many of them. So he's saving his voice for them.
Thank you for being understanding. I hope you'll maintain that same tune after his question. Lenny loves Fantasy Focus, first of all.
Really? That's awesome.
He's a subscriber. Yeah. But he wants to know how it feels for you to know that his name, a dog has his name on a podcast and your name's not on yours?
Ooh, that's a good one. First of all, Lenny, a longtime listener, Big Ten fan. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that till right now.
You should complain.
I was going to say, like, I
change
might
the name.
Know, like, Peachy or whoever.
Your name starts with an F.
Yeah.
It
the
fits
Fantasy
in.
Focus Field podcast.
Fantasy the Fantasy Focus
field
with Field.
Podcast. Yeah.
Featuring Field.
Yeah.
Like Lenny.
Four Fs.
All right.
I'm into it.
I'll take it up with Barry.
Good luck.
Yeah.